fact, this is what Islam teaches us. This is what the Holy Quran teaches us. And of course, this is what the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, the divinely appointed Imams, they teach us. The Almighty Allah wants us to always be positive, to have a negative outlook on life, to have a pessimistic outlook on life. This is reprimanded in Islam. And matter of fact, in some cases, this can lead to becoming a haram act, a prohibited act, and it could be considered a sin. Pessimism, negativity, always thinking that the glass is half empty, these are un-Islamic ideas. Islam teaches us to be positive. Imam Ali alayhi salam and his universal persona teaches us to be positive. There are so many beautiful things in our lives. And sometimes we say, well, we are facing a trial or a difficulty. If we look at it in a positive manner, yes, it might be difficult, but it will help us to get through that difficulty if we look at it as a positive thing that is happening. In the traditions, we find that the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, they say that when Allah wants somebody to come close to Him after they have sinned, Allah puts them through some kind of a small punishment, a small difficulty, a small test, so that that individual turns towards the Almighty Allah and asks for forgiveness. So even that small problem that we're facing, that difficulty that we're facing, that issue that has come up, this thing that is worrying us could very well be a path and a door to turn towards the Almighty Allah and ask for forgiveness. But again, we have to have a positive outlook. It is that positive outlook that will give us the peace and mind to turn towards Allah in a positive aspect so that we can open our hands and beg at the door of the Almighty Allah, the one who is constantly waiting for us to return to Him, to turn to Him, to ask from Him, to beseech from Him, to supplicate to Him. These are just a few of the things that we learn from Imam Ali alayhi salam. Always, dear brothers and sisters, have a positive outlook on your life, and most especially when you are going through those difficult times. A very heart-moving lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRib English Radio, the program To My Brother. This moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. أشهد أنك جاهدت في الله حق جهاده وعملت بكتابه واتبعت سنن نبيه.
I testify that you made utmost efforts, as it should be, in the cause of Allah, acted upon His book, followed the way of life of His Prophet, blessings of Allah be on him and his children, to the last moment of your life, until Allah invited you to come unto Him and used His discretion to take you away and sealed your enemy's doom with the blame that the arguments had been made known to one and all through you. O Allah, let me be happy and satisfied with that which Thou considers good for me. Let me agree with that which Thou decides for me. Let me passionately remember Thee and invoke Thee. Let me be in love with Thy pure and sincere friends. Let me be well-liked and respected on the earth and in the heavens. Let me be unruffled and well-composed in the midst of misfortunes. Let me be gratefully thankful in prosperity. Let me be mindful of much and more bounties. Let me ardently desire for the heart-warming meeting with Thee, well-equipped with piety to gain my end on the day of requital. Let me follow into the footsteps of Thy representatives. Let me disassociate myself from the mannerism of Thy enemies. Let me pass my time in this world by praising and glorifying Thee.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
Surah Tawbah is one of the last surahs to be revealed. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, يُرِيدُونَ أَن يُطْفَعَ نُورَ اللَّهَ بِأَفْوَاهِهِمْ. That there are people who wish to put all out the light of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. They would like to blow off the nur of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala with their mouths, بِأَفْوَاهِهِمْ. But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, يَعْبَ اللَّهَ إِلَّا. When we talk about the nur of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Allah is not nur. Allah is خالق النور. Nur is the creation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. There are various manifestations of the nur of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And one of the best example of the nur of Allah is the personality of Ali ibn Abi Talib. In that light, this ayat is saying that one example of this would be that there are people who try to, you know, put off the nur of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. وَيَعَبَ اللَّهُ إِلَّا. But Allah fully intends to do nothing but أَن يُطِمَّ نُورُهُ, to protect His nur. And if Allah is so much intent in doing it, people can do whatever they want. You know, people during the early days from the Umayyads to the present time in form of the Wahhabis and the Salafis, they tried their best to diminish the name and the image of Ali ibn Abi Talib. But they were losers in the past, and they will be losers now and in the future. Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, يَعَبَ اللَّهُ إِلَّا. Allah intends nothing but أَن يُطِمَّ نُورُهُ, but to protect and complete his nur. For us, Ali is not only a good Sahabi, he's not only a learned scholar, he's not only a very pious person, he's actually the pure embodiment of Islam. The Prophet of Islam brought the message of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which is known as Islam. That message in form of theory manifested in form of the Quran. But if you look at that message in form of a practical example, it manifested in form of Ali ibn Abi Talib. So basically, when he brought Islam, he brought Quran on one hand and Ali on the other hand. Both are the miracles and the mujizat of Rasulullah to the Ummah. You have to look at the Quran, learn what you have to do, look at the example of Ali, and this is where you have to follow. And he expressed this very clearly in Ghadir when he says, إِنِّي تَارِكُمْ فِيكُمُ السَّقَلَيْنِ. I am leaving two saqalain. I am leaving two precious things among you as source of guidance. One is Kitabullah, the book of Allah, the Quran, and the other is Itrat Ahlul Bayt. And at the head of the Ahlul Bayt, we have the personality of Ali ibn Abi Talib, alayhi salatu wasalam.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
History of Iranian Carpets
Part 3
It was almost from the middle of the 1980s that a large number of production units entered the market in this field, many of which are today one of the largest manufacturers of machine-made carpets in Iran. After the Islamic Revolution, one of the problems that Iranian carpets were faced with was currency issues and the US sanctions. Despite the sanctions and the presence of rival countries such as India, Pakistan, and China, it has become difficult to export Iranian carpets. Rival countries imitated the patterns of traditional Iranian carpets and offered carpets similar to Iranian carpets, and sometimes even more delicate. Under the name of Iranian carpets, which foreign buyers couldn't identify, they're not Persian. The export of carpets in these countries is supported, and the wages of the weavers are low. As a result, the carpets of these countries are often offered in the market at a low and uncompetitive price. From the beginning of the 1970s, the importance of carpet weaving in Iran's economy, particularly in terms of generating employment and providing foreign exchange income, was noticed. It was here that the first international exhibition of carpets of Iran was held in the permanent location of the exhibitions in 1992, and at the same time as the annual meeting of the International Conference on Carpet in Tehran. Famous carpet experts and businessmen from 14 countries came to Iran, and this event raised the status of Iranian carpets in the world. After that, this international exhibition was held every year because it also boosted the domestic carpet market. As a result of this exhibition, a large number of carpet sellers turned to producing carpets, and gabe weaving, which was almost forgotten in the pre-revolution era, flourished again. Gabe is a traditional variety of carpets with the difference that it is usually prepared in smaller sizes and longer piles, and it is the handmade art of the nomads. After the second international carpet exhibition, in 1993, new woven samples of gabe came to the market, and for years they were exported more compared to other new woven carpets. Gabe weaving flourished so much that not only the nomads of Fars, Kogligluye, and Boya Ahmad, Shahar Mahal, and Bakhtiari, who were traditionally engaged in gabe weaving, but also many cities and villages in the south and center of Iran launched gabe weaving workshops. In addition to reviving the art of gabe weaving, which was almost being forgotten, rural and nomadic carpet weaving cooperatives and large dyeing centers were also established by Jihad of Construction and handicrafts organizations of Iran to improve the quality and quantity of carpet weaving in some parts of the country. But one of the most impressive innovations after the revolution was weaving large carpets by several hundred meters long by the initiative Iran Carpet Joint Stock Company. If we want to mention one of these masterpieces, we should visit the United Arab Emirates. This is the Sheikh Zayed Mosque in Abu Dhabi, the UAE. The Sheikh Zayed Mosque is the third grand mosque in the world, which also houses the world's largest carpet. The largest carpet in the world, which is spread in this mosque since 2010, is 5,634 square meters and is made by 1,200 carpet weavers living in Neishabur, who have woven it in two daily and night shifts for 18 months. This large carpet, which has been recorded as the world's largest carpet in Guinness Book, was unveiled in a ceremony attended by local and foreign journalists in the Grand Mosella Mosque of Tehran. Every day, nearly 2,000 tourists visit the world's largest carpet in Sheikh Zayed Mosque. The design of this carpet is an overall flower covering five medallions in the middle of a green inner field. In the inner field of the carpet, embossed lines have been created that cannot be seen from a distance, but can be seen up close and guide the worshippers in creating straight and orderly processions. Another sample of hand-woven masterpieces after the revolution is spread in this location, Sultan Qaboos Grand Mosque in Oman. This carpet was woven in Neishabur for 3 years and was spread in this mosque in 2001. At the time, this carpet was considered the largest hand-woven carpet in the world. The approximate dimensions of this carpet are 60 by 70 meters, and it covers the entire surface of the main nave. The design of the central medallion of this carpet is inspired by the motifs of the Sheikh Lotfullah Mosque in Isfahan. Each of the oval motifs of this medallion gradually gets larger as it moves away from the center of the medallion and reflects a dome that is exactly under the dome of the Grand Mosque and creates a beautiful harmony with the interior architecture of the mosque. The inner field of the carpet is decorated with palmette flowers, and the weft is pure cotton yarn, and the pile is wool. This carpet now covers the main nave of Sultan Qaboos Grand Mosque in Muscat, Oman. With the establishment of Iran National Carpet Center at the beginning of 2003, the support of this national art and industry became targeted and focused. Therefore, despite the unfavorable economic situation, Iran's carpet maintained its global export position in the second to fourth ranks. Currently, 2 million people are directly engaged in carpet weaving and 191,000 people are working in its ancillary industries. Also, there are 115 conservatories in the field of carpets and 5,500 graduates of hand-woven carpet art. According to statistics, the largest export of Iranian carpets took place in 1994. This year, Iran was able to set a record of $2,117,000,000 in the export of hand-woven carpets, setting the best carpet export statistics for itself. In this year, nearly 44% of Iran's non-oil exports were supplied only through carpets, and around 5 to 7 million new jobs were created. Only 1 year later, i.e. in 1995, the amount of exports decreased from $2 billion to $1 billion, And in 1996, this number reached $675 million. In 2021, the exports of Iran's hand-woven carpets reached around $50 million. Among the reasons for the decline in the export of Iranian carpets are the sanctions, the presence of cheap carpets from China and India under the name of Iranian carpets, money transfer problems, lack of presence in international markets, and policies such as foreign exchange liabilities, neglecting delicate weaving and the quality of hand-woven carpets. In the foreign exchange liability, carpet traders are obliged to deliver the currency obtained from unsold carpet in the ways determined by the central bank. If the businessman cannot fulfill the foreign exchange obligation, their business card will be cancelled. This policy has caused many businessmen to cease the export of Iranian carpets and rugs. On the other hand, the increase in the cost of carpet weaving raw materials has also reduced the amount of production. Despite all these problems, Iran is usually among the three main carpet exporting countries in the world, and the Iranian carpets are still one of the most popular and high-quality ones in the global markets. Therefore, with a little support and attention, it can return to its main position. One of the solutions is to remove obstacles such as foreign exchange liabilities. Removing wrong policies and obstacles will definitely lead to more traders to export carpets. In addition to this, supporting organizations, given the importance of the production process, should also put supporting designers and weavers on their agenda. At the same time, experts need to prepare a targeted program for carpet production by examining the culture, demand, and taste of different countries. Countries like Latin America, China, and Russia have the largest markets for Iranian carpets. And among European countries, Germany, England, and Switzerland also use Iranian carpets. Arab countries like Lebanon, Kuwait, Qatar, and the UAE also demand Iranian carpets. If suitable markets for the export of hand-woven carpets and their needs are recognized, i.e. if the carpets are exported in a specialized manner and according to the tastes of the people of each country, Iranian carpets can compete in the best possible way in the country's markets. Another issue that has a great impact on exports is effective advertising. In order to export as many carpets as possible, it is necessary to be seen in international markets with professional advertisements. In this regard, the unique features of Iranian carpets that do not exist in Chinese, Indian, and Afghan carpets should be introduced to international buyers. Continued presence in public and virtual media, documenting and broadcasting on international networks, adds to the boom in sales and exports. The history of carpets in Iran is more than 2,500 years old. Iranian carpets have always been famous for their richness of color, variety of artistic patterns, and design quality. So the Iranian carpets are kept in palaces, famous buildings, mansions, and museums all over the world. Unfortunately, material intellectual property rights at the national and international level, i.e. copyright, is not implemented in our country. And this issue has led to the registration of Iranian designs in other countries by some profit seekers. Sometimes the designs and patterns of great Iranian designers in a different historical era are woven by weavers in China, India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and other countries, and are sold at a low price in global markets under the name of Iranian carpets, hurting the credibility, authenticity, and national identity of Iranian carpet. Machine-made carpet factories have closed the path for innovation and creation of new designs based on the needs of today's customers of Iranian hand-woven carpet by abusing the absence of the material intellectual property rights and weaving the designs of authentic hand-woven carpet brands. With the recognition and implementation of the material intellectual property rights regarding the design, pattern, dyeing, weaving, method of carpets, and other required items, the position of Iranian carpets at the international level will be improved. Our country relies on the export of carpets as a means of income, but with this historical background, the officials should just focus on supporting this art so that the Iranian carpet provides a large part of the country's non-oil income and helps develop this land by job creation, and to hand over this trust in the second flag of our dear Iran to the next generations.
Start. Movement. Speed. Living Hope.
Toward the Peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam my deen. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in thy name we start. This is IRB English Radio and Youth Station. I am Asma.
And I am Vita here.
Yes, another episode in here, and I hope that you enjoy it. So wherever you are, I hope you're doing well and life is going so cheery, so smooth,
really?
And so happy wherever you,
know, before you came here, I had a monologue.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when you have monologue, you feel the loneliness here in this studio. No one is there. You are by yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And this is a hell.
So peaceful it is.
It is not peaceful. It's torture.
You know, to think about sitting in a room so lonely,
yeah,
by yourself is such a peaceful thinking.
Just dear listeners, you cannot look at her right now, how cheerful she is when talking about loneliness.
Yes, I'm the sort of a person, you know, it's going to be so paradoxical if I talk about my true feelings towards loneliness. Solitude is a more beautiful word that I would prefer. Loneliness is the feeling that comes from the inside, that you feel like from the inside you're alone. Yes, just look at it from this perspective, that when you do not feel lonely from the inside, and even in your solitude, you understand the presence of a greater mighty power on your side, you would look like this fancy creature in a fanciful world.
Yeah.
Right? So when I'm alone, I do not feel like alone, but it feels like everywhere is just out of nobody. Nobody is there, but there are many things in my mind There are many people in my mind.
So you like it?
Yeah, I like it.
But I think loneliness can be a bit dangerous, you know?
Of course.
It depends on your capacity and your potential powers that you have in yourself. But sometimes it is really, really difficult to control yourself when you're lonely about your thoughts. You may think about everything, and everything means everything. So you may open the doors that are forbidden for you. And especially because specifically we are in your station, we're talking about youth generation. And I think they are struggling with loneliness more and more because of the situations, because of the social medias and so on.
Because of the change of the format of the families.
Exactly. And the gap generation that we have a lot in every family, you know, they feel lonely and they may be addicted to this loneliness.
Yeah.
And I think this addiction
this is the worst
is the
part, which we see too much. You know, they've been addicted to it.
Yeah. And, you know, they may feel this loneliness because we are addicted to that with the things that may harm them, you know, with the thoughts that may be really, really harmful for them and for them and detrimental. So and because of that, I think more than being lonely in your youth times, you have to try to communicate with other people. I mean, I know it's so good to be lonely and just get drowned into your thoughts, but I prefer to be in community and society. This is the way I am in my
That's
life.
Very nice, though I thought the otherwise about you. I mean, I thought you're the kind of person who...
Exactly, I'm the person that I love being lonely, and I feel like...
And at the same time, I hate being lonely.
Exactly. And
I understand that, though.
But, you know, I just try to torture myself not to be addicted to that, you know, by going out and trying to communicate with other people.
Yeah, by not losing the sense of community.
Exactly. I try to keep a balance within these two. But this is difficult. You know, I don't want to do that, really. I don't want to talk
to
people. You
know, sometimes even being in a crowd is not going to do the solution. Because I myself have understand that sometimes in a crowd, I feel even more lonely.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I go to, I don't know, to the community to find someone to talk to, and I feel like I'm going to go through a mental breakdown after that.
Exactly. I have to go through a break for too long after communicating.
And I regret it, of course, that why did you do such a thing to go for the longer period of being lonely?
Yeah, what about a break?
Yeah.
Let's go for a short break and we'll be back in no time, in a blink of an eye, to talk more about solitude and loneliness. Yes, yes, you're listening to The Station. I'm Asma, and Bita is here with me. We're talking about something so interesting.
You know, at the same time, that being lonely tastes really good. Being here with you at your station is something else.
Of course, they've been here.
With our dear listeners, for sure.
Of course, yes. It would have been better if they were right in here, all of them.
Yeah, but, you know, they can comment us, you know. They can share their opinions about your station with us on theparstoday.com. Page full of Islam.
Yes, so loneliness. You know, speaking of solitude, just reminds me of a lecture I gave at university about solitude. And then I started talking about it without knowing I got for a quarter of an hour in a class. Everyone was just so silent listening to me talking about solitude.
This is why I'm trying to stop her to not ruin this youth station with talking and talking about loneliness.
But then I have to say it. I have to confess right in here in front of everyone that, yes, I love solitude because in my little room, I have my own world with my books, with my movies, with the internet, of course, because without that, I'm not going to have any movie.
Your world is beautiful.
But then aside from that, when I open the door, I have a family. And all of them are there waiting for me, and they would share comments with me. They would talk to me about their problems, and they would ask me about my own problems. So I am sure of the people who are waiting for me outside that door.
Now, this is a bit of a perspective that you have someone there out of your solitude to go for them. But how about this thing that...
So maybe solitude is beautiful for me because I'm so sure of the people I have on my back.
Exactly. And the thing I wanted to ask you was that what if someone wants to enter your solitude, enter your world? Yeah, what do you do
now?
In that
situation? Very difficult.
It is because
no,
it's
that's
like,
going to be
you know,
so difficult.
Yeah, it's like your rights and your life is being violated by someone, and I know you will feel the same way.
Yeah,
you will feel like, okay, this is my world, and you're coming here and ruin everything.
You're just distracting everything.
Exactly. But
yeah.
So how will you deal with that?
There is a private zone for every introvert person.
Yeah.
That no one could get into. Except for those who are very, very dear. And the number of those people is not going to get over...
Five, I think. Maybe
no,
less.
No, even less.
Yeah.
Maybe two or three.
I do agree.
So now, keeping that aside, I would say that, yes, accepting other people into your own world is a difficult thing. But that is actually a talent, of course.
It is.
You must have. Now, let's get back to the right track of our own discussion. Solitude is a beautiful feeling, but loneliness is not. As I just told you, when I open the door, there is this family waiting for me. But what if there were no family? What if I had no friends? What if I had no one on my back?
Yeah.
So would it have been the same way?
No.
As beautiful as it is right now for me to open the door.
I can certainly tell you that it wouldn't be like that.
Exactly.
Because at every time...
That exact feeling is the feeling of loneliness.
It is.
Yeah.
You know, I felt it for 3 years. Let me narrate you my story. I was studying for university entrance examination for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And it was the 3 years that we were struggling with the COVID-19 pandemic. And there were no one there for me.
Yeah.
No one.
Such very difficult years.
I was completely divided from the real world, from the community, from other people. And it was an absolute loneliness.
You feel like an alien.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
feel like you did not belong to this world.
And sometimes I felt like, come on, I don't want to leave anymore, really. I had that feeling. And this is the bitterness of loneliness. So the thing I want to mention here is that there are a group of people who think like loneliness is a treasure. It's not. It's a torture.
No, it's not. Yes.
And, you know, you have to understand that if you are enjoying your solitude, if you're enjoying a period of your time that you're lonely, it is because the people that you have out of your comfort zone.
There's another point in here.
Yeah.
I'd like to add it, but let's go for a short break, and then after that, we're going to go through it.
Okay.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, dear listeners. Yes, we're talking about loneliness, and I told you that there is a point that I want to mention, which is about the fact that loneliness, if it's a choice by yourself, is going to be nice. But when it is imposed on you, it's not going to be nice ever. When this loneliness has been imposed to you by society, by other people, by your lifestyle, by whatever it has been imposed on you, it's not going to count as beautiful as it is when you choose it by yourself.
So, you know, you're going to suffer it.
Yes,
sure.
You're going to suffer from it. Now, there are these kind of people who have not chosen solitude or loneliness as for their company, but they have to be alone.
Yeah.
These kind of people are going to suffer so much in their life. And then the best company for these people, I suppose, is Allah himself and Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, and the thought of these people and of the Lord, because that's going to be the only survival rope to yeah. get a stick to.
And on the other hand, the other group that we're talking about, that they chose to be lonely, I can relate to that because it was maybe this week that I decided to delete some of the people in my life. Most of my friends, I deleted all of these people and my life is completely empty right now.
And, yeah, and I guess you have to be brave and courageous to do that.
Yeah, it was really difficult for me, especially for some special people that they were important to me, you know, really important. It was really difficult for me to choose between being lonely and starting from a new level, a new yeah. point, and between having these emotions, just fighting with my just logic and rationality and so on. And it was really difficult for me, but I did it. And because of that, I want to tell you that I can relate to the story of choosing loneliness. And even despite the fact that Allah is always there for all the people, and especially for the group that you mentioned, that they are not choosing loneliness, they are being forced to be lonely. But I think the presence of Allah Almighty is just more emphasized and more highlighted for this group, that they are choosing loneliness.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, because, that's what I'm telling you. Exactly. You know, you're going to get to know the other mighty powers by your side.
Exactly.
You're going to get familiar with the things you have never met in your life.
This remembrance of Allah is enough.
Yeah, I guess that's going to just do as a miracle for you. If you just think about this fact that He is there for me, He would never let me alone. And trust me, He would send you some angels from nowhere.
Exactly. And after this period of your loneliness is going to end, you will feel like you miss it. I bet you will miss it.
Exactly. And, because it's going to be a turning point in your life.
It is. It is for sure, because you are strengthening your bond with your Lord.
Yeah.
And that's it, mm-hmm. I think.
Unfortunately, this was all the time that we had for today's episode.
Thank you for listening to us.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed it, by the way, though it was solitude and loneliness.
Yeah.
Well, I love solitude, but as I just told you, I have picked it by myself. It has not been imposed on me, and then I have the people
exactly.
that I would love to have in my life.
In your back.
So, yeah, this was all. I hope there is no one out there who's suffering from loneliness. And if you are, please, please, please put your trust in Allah and try to find yourself some angels.
And listen to our episodes.
Yeah.
We're here to talk to you.
Yeah, you can read books. And, you know, sometimes all of these things, then again, if we start this discussion right now, we're going to go through another cycle, because it's not going to work all the time.
Yeah.
It's not always watching movies or reading books. Not all the time are going to do the thing that people would do for you.
Yeah.
Like two eyes looking at you and then nodding and then sharing some sympathy and empathy with you. That's a different thing, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the lonely people, I hope God would send you some angels from nowhere to help you out of your solitude.
And I'm sure He will.
Yeah,
so,
of course.
I bid you farewell. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I have you, my dear. May God protect you, my dear. May God protect you.
IRIB English Radio. For those who seek the truth.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering the doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah هو ذا الرحمن
Allah
هو ذا المنان.
لا إله
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. We're welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I'm Atta, the host of this program. Sheikh Karimi is the guest speaker for today's discussion. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
Okay, Sheikh Karimi, every year in the month of Safar, so many people take a long trip to Karbala in order to commemorate the tragedy of Karbala, especially on the day of Arba'in, on the occasion called Arba'in Walk. So many people from around the world, men, women, children, you know, take part in this procession in remembrance of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Now, one of the things that usually took place is the crowded population over there on the roads to the city of Karbala. So many women and men are over there. These non-mahrams are over there, stranger men and women may walk towards the city of Karbala. We can say, according to the Islamic Sharia, Islamic beliefs, doesn't it make any problem to walk alongside with the non-mahrams towards, we can say, the holy city of Karbala over there, because the population is very much, you know, and the people are many, especially at the presence of the city of Karbala during the days of Taswan, Shura, we can say, and the Arba'in, so many men and women are over there around the holy shrine of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Doesn't it make any problem according to Islamic Sharia?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the previous episode, we talked about the spiritual journey of, this Arba'in walk or procession from different cities to Karbala, especially from Najaf, and how virtuous it is. And it doesn't make any difference whether you're man or woman, a child or adult, it doesn't make any difference. I mean, almost all the people who have experienced this Arba'in walk, they, are more eager to be present in the following year again, which means that for almost all the people, whether they are men or women, children, doesn't make any difference, old people, for them it is a very spiritual, meaningful and sweet experience, and that is why they want to go again. Although no one can claim that it is without any hardship. No, all the people who walk, they will have some problems, some hardships, but it is a sweet one. Now, the question that you mentioned, sometimes it is raised by some people who are especially anti-Shia. And like, for example, the Wahhabis, they raise this question of, men and women being together, and this is illegal, prohibited according to the religion of Islam. So why Shia, they are allowing their women to take part in this procession, and they are committing, sins for taking part in this procession. So first of all, we need to pay attention to the root of such questions. Second of all, when it comes to men and women, the non-mahram ones being together and walking together, In and of itself, for sure, it is not haram. It doesn't make any difference if you are 12-er Shia or Maliki, Hanafi, Shafi, Hanbali. No one has ever claimed that for men and women to be present in the same place and walking together without touching, of course, it is prohibited. Yes, in some cases, it might be makruh or dislike. In some cases, it is an obligation. Remember tawaf, circumambulation around the holy house of God, the Kaaba. We know that men and women do circumambulation together, of course, without touching.
Yes.
So the question that is raised by, from all Muslims is that, is it haram for men and women to do tawaf and circumambulation around Kaaba? Is it haram? Is it forbidden? No one has ever claimed that this is haram. Of course, they should try their best not to touch each other.
Mm-hmm.
So For sure. I mean, for all those people who have experienced this Arba'in walk, on the road from Najaf to Karbala or other cities to Karbala, it is just walking. There is no touching at all.
Yes.
And no one has ever claimed that it is requiring, forbidden action. Of course, when it comes to visiting the holy shrine of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, yes, on special occasions like on the day of Ashura, on the day of Arba'in, for women, in order for them to go to the shrine, to inside the shrine, it may lead to some, illegal actions like touching, for example. In that case, yes, it is prohibited. And usually women refrain from that. But my point is that in and of itself, walking from Najaf to Karbala and being present in this Arba'in walk does not lead to any illegal actions, like, for example, touching non-mahram.
Yes.
This is one point.
IRIB English Radio presents Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
The second point is that for all the people, be it the Iraqis, Iranis, people from Lebanon, Syria, India, and we can claim that from all over the world, no one has this sexual understanding of this walk. This is a spiritual walk. I think you cannot find any person in this Arba'in walk who is not practicing iffah and chastity. All the people are heading toward Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, his holy shrine. All the people are lamenting and mourning for Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. They are saying, Ya Hussein.
Yes.
They are taking part in religious rituals, in mourning for Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. So hardly you may find any person who may try to look at non-mahram with an illegal intention. So my point is that, as you rightly mentioned in another session in the previous episode, it's not a carnival. People are not here for, enjoyment, worldly enjoyment. They are here for a spiritual one, for a spiritual experience and happiness and joy. So for such people, they never have a kind of sexual gaze at non-mahram. And of course, people who are present, we know that there are many mawakib, many houses in which the Iraqis, they are welcoming the guests from different countries. So the issues of mahram and non-mahram are absolutely observed by all the people in these places of residence. And nothing is seen by respect for the women and for the children and old people, men and women. So this is a wrong understanding of this Arba'in walk. Otherwise, if women had ever felt that this is a kind of negative experience, no one would have repeat such experience. But as I mentioned, almost all the people who have experienced this walk once, they try to go again. The next point is that in one paper, one statistics, a number of Iranian women who were present in Arba'in walk were interviewed. And the results were interesting about the main motives of these women taking part in this Arba'in walk. Many of them, they raise issues which are related to Imam Mahdi alayhi salam and the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. They mentioned that they wanted to be more prepared for the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. For some other women taking part in Arba'in Walk, they refer to some moral issues. They have mentioned that in their interview that taking part in Arba'in Walk would help us to do self-purification in a much better and easier way. And of course, for some of them, they raise issues like cultural relations between Irani and Iraqi people, and also religious issues like divine mercy, divine grace, and the grace of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And of course, for some people, for them to gain and reach their needs, their hawa'ij. So you see, all the women who have been present in these interviews, their intentions are divine. And no one even thinks taking part in this Arba'in Walk for anything other than Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, other than Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
And if something wrong over there happens in the population, what is the duty of the Muslims now? They have to leave out the population? For example, I don't know, the touch of the body of the men and women, non-mahrams over there, or something like that. So there must be a strategy taken over
exactly.
there.
Exactly. As I mentioned, usually people predict everything. They know that, usually when we're talking about Arba'in Walk from Najaf to Karbala, you do not see so much population in one place so that we have illegal touching. No. It might happen only on special days for the holy shrine of Imam Hussein alayhi salam itself. So if women, they come to this conclusion that if they go to the shrine on the day of Arba'in, for example, it is probable that touching with non-mahram may happen. Of course, in that case, they shouldn't go. And this is maybe the viewpoint of almost all the Shia scholars, because it is, anything that may lead to an illegal action, you shouldn't do that. So if you go toward the holy shrine, you are sure that, illegal action, touching will happen. So in that case, you need to do that. And the majority of the women, they are attentive toward these Islamic laws.
That's all right. Okay.
The other point that I would like to share also is the fact that one of the reasons for Arba'in Walk is to remember the tragedy of Karbala and what happened after the tragedy of Karbala regarding the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, the women and the children. We know that for many days they were going from Kufa to Damascus, and according to some narrations, from Damascus to Karbala. So the very presence of women in Arba'in Walk is a kind of remembrance of what happened over the family of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam took his family members in his journey from Mecca to Karbala. So the presence of women can be, as I mentioned, a symbol of repeating what happened to Imam Hussein alayhi salam family again, and a kind of showing respect toward the Ahlul Bayt of Imam Hussein alayhi salam as well.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh. It was very kind of you.
My pleasure.
And
my
thank
pleasure.
You much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. See another episode. God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban li Ali wa Husayn wa Hasan. لعلي وحسين وحسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسان لعلي وحسين وحسان كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن حسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي وحسين وحسان.
Eye on Islam.
Assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you, and welcome to Eye on Islam, the show where we look at current affairs through an Islamic lens. Each week, we look at a trending news story and we break it down from an Islamic perspective. Now, it's a known fact that believing men and women are required to practice hijab in public spaces. But for us sisters living in the West, societal pressures push